Welcome to Asset Finance Connect's series of podcasts on the European asset finance industry. I'm Richard O'Donoghue, and over the next few months, I'll be chatting with industry experts about the challenges and opportunities facing our industry in 2025 and beyond. All this is possible with the sponsorship of Alpha.
I'm at the Asset Finance Connect Leaders Summit in Amsterdam. And for those of you who aren't here, I'm going to try and grab a few people and ask them for their impressions of the event and also maybe touch on some of the topics that we've discussed today. So first of all, I've got Didier Muller. Didier worked at Dell Financial Services in the Benelux for a number of years. And Didier, you sat in on the panel around vendor finance and the captives. Any thoughts on that? Things that resonated with you? Anything you didn't agree with?
No, thanks, Richard, and thanks for inviting me to this great event in Amsterdam. What I picked up from the panel session is from the manufacturers, the vendors, if they require financing, so with the funders, etc., it's mostly driven also out of speed, etc., and what you typically hear today with the IT companies. So it's, in most cases, very quarter-end, back-end loaded, the business. So then a lot of flexibility is also required from the funder panels. So that was a key takeaway. So pricing is important, maybe somewhat not the important, but speed of and agility from funders is really to service the business and to help them support in doing the deals. That is a key takeaway, I think, from that panel.
And I think there was a bit of a hush in the room and a bit of surprise when a couple of people said the price wasn't the be-all and end-all, it was the ability to respond, particularly a quarter end, which you'll be very familiar with the pressures in a captive.
Yeah, correct. So yeah, within a captive, before Dell, I was within EMC, and then we used external funding parties. So it was also very quarter end, back-end loaded. And then you had the flexibility of those funders who were available 7, 8, 9 p.m. at night, still available for doing pricing, credit, etc., to support the deals, etc. So that is a true differentiator in the market if you can support those kind of transactions for doing and enabling the deals for those companies.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for sharing your thoughts and thanks for coming along today.
Thanks, Richard.
So now I've just grabbed Chantal Vanken from Cisco Capital. So Chantal, we had Didier Muller talking about the captives discussion this morning. You were on that panel. And one of the things you talked about was the importance of people when you're working with partners, with funding partners. Maybe just for, again, for our listeners, touch on that again. It was a point I think resonated with a lot of the members of the audience here.
Yeah. So yeah, I mentioned indeed people because that's what we have experienced. So we're working with funding partners, and especially one large one has dedicated resources for us. And what you really see is that if you have a really good person, which is really capable to balance, you know, how to work their own company, so the vendor finance company, but also really tries to understand and get integrated within Cisco in this case, yeah, then you really can have a hugely successful business together. I think one of the risks what we have experienced in the past is that if those people then move on, mm-hmm. And nobody has really thought about succession or it's difficult to find new people in the market, effectively that whole business can break down.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, the people are so crucial. Also, as said, like the way how they work within their own company, with their credit and legal, etc., really, yeah, trying to pave the way for us and Cisco's business, but then also how well they integrate within the Cisco team and also with the partners. I think, yeah, that's really key. But on the other side, that's also a huge vulnerability.
Those are hard people to get because they need, the skills of managing their own organization,
correct,
which is challenging, but they also then need to have a Cisco culture, for example, if they're working with you.
Yeah. So effectively, what you really see in the tech companies and also within Cisco is that it's really fast business, you know, and you really can't sit back. Effectively, you continuously have to be in everybody's face, show that you are there, and that you can help them and, you know, create that value add that you want to do. And if you think that you can just, you know, sit behind the desk, then the business is going to come. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think that's cultural difference a little bit between, I think, vendor financing companies and also then the people that we try to hire for Cisco Capital, for example.
Yeah. And the other thing that really I think people listened to this morning, and it was a very interesting point, and all of the panelists mentioned it, was executive buy-in.
Yeah.
And normally, you know, you and I have both been in Captus for a lot of our careers. We think about executive buy-in within our own company, within a Cisco or within a Dell. But you talked about executive buy-in within the partners, within your funding partners, yeah, being important. Maybe just talk a little bit about that.
So what we have done is that, in general, we don't select one partner per country. So we really want to have partners who can cover more business, so more globally, preferably. And then you get a program manager, which is really good because they then try to manage, you know, effectively those dedicated resources and the numbers, etc. But what we have experienced is that also in the past, every country had their own authority and mm-hmm. they could effectively decide what those people were working on. So you really need to have high level buy-in and commitment towards the OEM, or in this case Cisco, from those funding partners, because otherwise, you know, everybody is just doing, you know, they think is best
for their country.
For their country, and of course for, yeah, it also comes down to compensation, of course, because that also needs to be aligned, because if that's not aligned, then you also effectively, you're
great,
not going to run a successful business.
Fantastic. Well, that's great food for thought for those who weren't in Amsterdam today. And Chantal, thanks for coming along, and
yeah,
thanks for dropping by to have a chat about it.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, so our next victim today is Emily Hammond from Alpha. And Emily this morning was talking about AI on the main stage. And Emily, you had a really great analogy that AI is a bit like a gym that somebody installs in the company. Maybe explain to the people who weren't here today what the analogy is and how it works.
So this is something I read on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is a great source sometimes. But it was talking about some big companies and how they were really trying to get people to use AI and AI tools, and they were trying to get it in all their workforce and make sure that they had that behavioural change. The analogy had been, well, there are some companies who want to get their workforce healthier. So then they go, how do we do that? Oh, we'll put in a gym. But that's not the end point, right? That you have to get people to go to the gym. You have to get people to eat more vegetables. They're not going to be able to do that. But maybe if they serve them in the cafeteria, but they still have to get to eat them. But how do you actually get people to take time out of their day, to go there, to use it, and to therefore benefit from it? So that was the thing about the AI tools. You can give it to them, but really a lot of people are reluctant to use them at the moment. They feel like it's taking away their sense of self-worth and parts of their job. So you actually have to do that behavioural change as well. So how do you do that? And that probably is another skill set that is needed in this whole transformation.
And that's like the meaning of life. How do you do that? How do you get people to use the gym?
I don't know. I mean, one of the things I said this morning as well, it's you can set these, what I call vanity metrics, in terms of you've got this objective up here that is like 95% of people have to go to the gym, and therefore that's it, and then that objective trickles down right through the organization, and maybe once they start going, they enjoy going,
yeah,
and then that's the thing. Or you just have to show them the benefit, or get people to take it into their own control, that you go, well, they start doing it and then they see what benefit that adds to their lives. But you've got to give them that little push
To get going. And
yeah,
and funny, we had a round table discussion subsequently around AI, and that was one of the takeaways, or one of the things that people said, is that as leaders, people need to be seen to use AI, even if it's in a very basic way. So you get people comfortable with using it, and only then, after a while, do you set outcomes and say, well, we need to achieve this. It starts like at a very simplistic level.
Yeah, and I think that's true, because you do just have to start using it. Right, and people in my team might start using it for basic tasks that they want to do, but that doesn't mean they're going to go and use it to write user stories yet, because that is going to give them rubbish outcomes at this point in time. But they start doing it for other things, and then they can spend more time writing the user stories, because that's going to need their brains. So it's that, you know, it's that how do you do that? But it's the actually show them the benefit, and maybe from their peers is actually quite a good thing. And that's what we found, you know, that someone in my team has been like, got this webinar transcript, put it in, here's the outcome, share that with everybody.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Particularly if you say, what a great job, then they feel they have to go and do the same. So I always like asking AI people this question. So I'm going to put you on the spot. What's the best use in your personal life for AI?
Can I point out I'm a real person, not an AI person?
Yes, I can assure everybody that is correct.
What is the best use for AI? Personal life. I think it's actually things like you're going to a new city and you kind of know where you want to go, right? So you'll be like, I want to go to this kind of bar that serves this kind of food, maybe has this kind of vibe. And then you can put that into your AI and it will give you the answer. And then you can use that.
It's a pity you didn't tell me about this yesterday and I could have done it for Amsterdam last night. But Emily, great having you. Thanks for dropping by.
No, that's great. Thank you.
So the next person I've grabbed just before the bar is Manuela Pajoni, who is the head of leasing for Central and Eastern Europe at UniCredit. And Manuela, thanks for joining us. It's about 20 years, I think, since we last met. But what are your takeaways from today? What did you enjoy the most, or were there things that were surprising to you?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. So, and it's great seeing you again. Well, in principle, what is always the best thing is to meet the people and to talk and to catch up, because we are not seeing each other so often, only when we are competing for the same customers. So it was really great seeing a lot of people that I've not met for a long time, sharing with them how they are doing, how the business is running. We are in Central Eastern Europe, which is a little bit different from most of the others who are in Western Europe. But still, it's very important to take this away. What I enjoyed a lot today was a lot of topics on AI. AI, I have really no... I would say no knowledge about it. The maximum I'm using is a robot to do my reporting. This is more or less it. But this triggered for me, and this is what I take away, to start using it more and to start building it into my daily life. My team, they are doing it, most of them. So I need to start doing it as well. And I think this could also make some differences.
We had a very quick chat with Emily Hammond, who spoke on the main stage from Alpha. And we talked about the importance of getting leaders to use AI, to encourage their teams to use it, because if we're not doing it, people aren't going to use it. So it sounds like you're going back, you're going to give it a go.
Absolutely. So this is one of my takeaways for sure, because this is something that I didn't do so far. And the other one is really definitely on the vendor business. It's very interesting hearing from the OEMs on their pain points, especially also that they also have to prove themselves. So we are always just thinking they are just pushing us, but at the end of the day, they are in the same position, even though it's not helping, but it's mentally helping that we are in the same boat. So this is also something where I say, okay, we need to sit down and discuss how we can support them better. So these are my main two takeaway besides meeting all of the people in the industry.
And I know you can hardly say it anymore, the COVID word, but I suppose after COVID we lost that ability to connect, and it's lovely to come to an event and see people and just talk to people. And and the event has been set up to encourage that, and there were a lot of breaks. So again, thanks for sharing your thoughts, and I'll let you get to the bar.
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, so I've managed to grab another person who was on their way to the bar this evening, and just going to delay them for 2 or 3 minutes, and that's Carmen Enne, who is the CEO of BNP Paribas 3-Step IT. So Carmen, thanks for dropping by for a couple of moments. What are your takeaaways from today, or what did you find most interesting on the day?
Thank you for having me first. Look, these kind of events are always very exciting. I think, first of all, is incredible occasion for networking. And you for sharing, because even though some of us might be even competitors, we basically face similar problems irrespective of what industries we are working on. So I think you become stronger when you have a sharing. And by the way, in such events, you can also find some partnerships that otherwise you wouldn't have this occasion to close. So yeah, it's always great to be here.
Yeah, and we were just talking with Manuela from UniCredit about it's lovely to meet people. That's really, you know, the topics are very interesting.
Stay away from Teams for a while. You know.
Exactly. Don't plug any Microsoft products. We might have a problem. But the other thing, I sat in on your session and we talked about sustainability. which is, you know, really important for you and for BNP more broadly. And there's a sort of feeling that maybe sustainability has fallen down the agenda, particularly with what's going on geopolitically. What are your thoughts on that?
Look, there were very good discussions on this item and very, very, preoccupying most of us now. I mean, if you look at the US, is the political, where politics goes, is clearly away in direction from the net zero, from regulations, from measurements, and so on and so forth. So I think, and it's basically everything that is seen as an obstacle to growing made in US. Now, Europe has been way ahead of US in terms of reducing the carbon and also in terms of legislation. I think they passed over 100 laws in that. But here, things are slowing down as well. So you have also politically the right that is gaining a lot of field. Economic growth doesn't come. So yes, but directionally you can feel that it's going in the same direction. Not as extreme, by no means. However, there is a feeling that it goes in the same direction. Nevertheless, does it mean, and that's my thought, does it mean that we as a leading industry should slow down our support specifically for the circular economy? I don't think so, because first of all, to get to the net zero, which in Europe so many companies and many governments still have on the agenda, it's impossible to go without circular economy. And the leasing industry is the vehicle for ensuring this transition. So, and then circular economy brings profitability. So Europe now is concentrating more on competitiveness, and I think competitiveness talks about profit and sustainable development, and circular economy brings all that. So yes, there is a concentration more on profit, rentability and competitiveness, but this is everything that circular economy is bringing. And on top of that is bringing sustainability. So BNP, Tristep IT, our joint venture, we are consistent and going on the course and continue to do what we're doing in facilitating the transition to circular economy.
Fantastic. Well, that's such a positive message. And I think you're right. In the room, you could sense the room was still very committed to sustainability, circular economy. So despite maybe the short-term blips, we're on a journey.
Exactly.
And so, look, lovely to end on a positive message. Thanks so much for dropping by, Carmen.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so we found another person on their way to the bar, Bengayi Kumbula from Innovant in South Africa. You've travelled a long way for this event, Bengayi.
Thank you. Yes, Richard, I've been inspired to come here to really meet the greatest of the greatest in the leasing industry.
And have you met them?
I've met lots of them, including yourself, Richard.
You're welcome on a podcast anytime in that case. I did notice as you were going by, you were exchanging business cards. So it's obviously been a big event for you to come to. It takes a lot of effort to fly from Johannesburg, but it seems like building the connections has been very valuable for you.
It's extremely valuable. As you know, our story is really about exposing our brand as Innovant coming out of Africa and Middle East, just to share our experiences and to be helpful with a lot of pan-European players at the moment who are looking for solutions in that region. And I think meeting and mingling with the leaders in Europe in the leasing industry has really been helpful.
And if you think about the day, a lot of topics covered, you know, what are your takeaways, or what were the topics you found most insightful?
So the captives section was really important for me. A lot of lessons around, let's call it the critical success factors that are important for any captive program to work, whether internal or with an external partner. As you know, we run a couple of captive finance houses for example, Lenovo Financial Services and HP Financial Services in the Middle East and Africa. And some of the challenges that were being discussed and how to overcome, some of them are really common in these type of things. And I found that quite insightful.
Great. So can we expect to see you at the next event next year?
If I'm invited, I definitely will book my ticket.
I think we will definitely invite you back. Bengayi, thanks so much for popping by, and go get that beer.
Thank you very much, Richard.
Great. So we found another person, actually, I think, on their way home. So we've managed to pull them in for a couple of minutes. And that's Peter Jan Benteyn, who is the Secretary General of Leasing Nederland. And Peter Jan, you spoke this morning about the Dutch leasing market and the fact that, you know, what's happening in the market here is kind of similar to what's happening right across Europe. So maybe for the people who weren't here today, maybe you could sort of share two or three sort of high level facts or things that are happening in the market here.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. And I mean, the Dutch leasing industry is in very good shape. I mean, last year, the total volume of new business was nearly 8 billion, which is a record-breaking number. But what is more important is that you see a number of trends that are quite interesting. And one of them is that the vendor part of distribution is growing over time steadily and has now even a position that is much larger than the banks in terms of distribution of new leases. So that's a very interesting one. And this is coupled a little bit by the fact that there are new entrants entering the market and offering leases, plain vanilla leases, basically, so not very complicated. The effect that this has is that the market has been growing even a little bit better than expected because of these new entrants that are doing a lot of things to attract new customers and attract especially SMEs for the industry. So, I mean, we are in pretty good shape. And one of the things that is happening in our market is that especially the building sector, the construction sector, has, together with the government and a lot of public and semi-public bodies, has signed a covenant with the goal of having, over time, a zero-emission construction site.
And in Amsterdam, you were saying already that exists.
There is a low-emission zone installed, which means that when you want to have a crane, for instance, on a construction site, that it must be electrified, so it can't be generated by a diesel. Of course, there are always exceptions to the rule, but that's the rule. So, I mean, in the Netherlands, this is kind of an experiment that we are doing, together with a roadmap which obliges construction companies to invest in electrified earth-moving equipment, for instance. And that is because we all know that also the construction sector is like an SME, family-owned sector. These guys, they are forced, they are obliged to invest in these assets, knowing that they are much more expensive than the traditional ones with diesel. They appeal on leasing companies to help them to finance these investments. So our members are like, they get this question, they get this demand from the market. The only thing is that within the companies, within the leasing companies, the risk managers especially look at the residual value. And because this is kind of unknown territory, we don't know the residual value of an electrified what will it be worth in 5 years' time, in 8 years' time, in 15 years' time? We don't have a clue. So that's a problem.
Yeah.
A challenge because also the customer, the end user, would like to have somebody taking this residual value position. And leasing companies are a little bit hesitant to do it. This is a discussion that is really happening as we speak. And it is interesting for both the leasing industry, but also construction industry, transport sector, as well as the government and all the public bodies that are ordering construction, constructions and infrastructure.
Fantastic. Well, look, thank you for giving the listeners who weren't here today your presentation covered so many more interesting topics, but we just wanted to give people a little flavor of the event.
I really enjoyed the discussions. I really enjoyed the topics that were presented today. So, I mean, this is really an event that we should repeat.
Excellent. Well, thank you for dropping by.
Okay, Richard.
It's great seeing
you. It's a pleasure.
Okay, so the next person we've grabbed and has a meeting in 10 minutes, so therefore we have to be really quick with this, is Jan Damrit from Econocom. Jan, I know you were at the first event last year, the first European event in Brussels. How does this event compare this year?
Even better. I enjoyed last year. It was my introduction. The venue is great, so that adds an extra level of experience to it. And some of the sessions we did were really, really good as well.
Yeah, well, that's the right answer, by the way, to say
okay,
even better.
Thank you.
And which sessions did you enjoy in particular? I'm hoping you're going to say the captives.
Yes, that was very good. That's always, always very good. But the focus for me and the one that I've taken the most away from was one of the AI sessions. It's a big buzzword at the moment. We're all talking about it, every networking event I go to. But we drill down into the detail. What does it really mean for asset finance? How do we start implementing it in our business? So we started with the basics, as you highlighted, and we went all the way up to how we make it real in our organisation. So key takeaway, and I can't get away from the connections part, is always really good. I've met people I haven't met before, and we'll be meeting up in London again with them.
Oh, fantastic. And just go back to the AI and the piece around how do we make it real going. What are you going to do differently, or what are you going to try to do when you go back home?
I'm going to get leadership team together and put together some steps, put a plan in place. That's what we haven't quite got at the moment. What are the outcomes that we want? What are the key priorities? That's what we drill down on. How do we actually make it happen from taking it to being the buzzword that we talk about to implementing it? So a session with our team in what are our key priorities, and then start building those blocks and putting those in place.
Fantastic. Well, we let you go to your meeting, but thanks so
Brilliant.
Much for dropping by, Jan.
Thank you so much, Richard. Bye-bye.
So I think probably the second last guest of the day, given that everybody is now heading to the bar and we've slowed you down from going there. So Marieke van Zouwen from BNP Paribas. Just interested in your takeaway from the day. Is this your first time at one of the Asset Finance Connect events?
It is, actually. I was invited, of course, for my role at BNP Paribas, but I'm also a board member of the Dutch Leasing Association, so I was here to support
Peter Jan. Yeah, we had Peter Jan a few moments ago telling us about his presentation.
Yes, exactly. So that's why I decided indeed to come here and join you today. For me, it was very nice to see that, although it feels like a local event to me, of course, this is an internationally focused conference for a change. That's nice, because I focus on the local markets, mm-hmm. Netherlands and Belgium, and this is for me a not so regular
I think everybody has sort of said they enjoyed meeting new people. Like, there's some people who know each other, but lots of people who hadn't met, and it's a great opportunity and lots of time for networking and breaks.
Exactly. And I think you can feel that is the reason why people
come to
stay for the whole day.
And in terms of the content, is there anything you particularly enjoyed or something you found surprising on the day?
I really liked the five people on stage representing the captive financing.
Oh, that's the right answer. I will pay for that answer.
Because, of course, they make it all very concrete. You know, the discussion about to choose or not to choose for captive versus external solutions, the hybrid model. It was an interesting insight to me that it needs to be a blend of power in the external world and flexibility and speed that they can secure internally. So that was, to me, an interesting discussion.
Yeah, and a number of people have mentioned that session, and they've all mentioned speed, and nobody has mentioned price, which was, I think, kind of an interesting thing for the funders in the audience, that speed and flexibility is critical.
Experience, yes. So it's important, because, as you can imagine, we always think that price is the number one selection criterion. But then, in the end, of course, it's all about the total experience, and that was very well represented here, yes.
That's great. Well, thank you for dropping by, and we'll let you go and enjoy the rest of the...
You're welcome, and enjoy the evening here in
Thanks.
Amsterdam.
Okay, so this is the final person I've grabbed who's already been to the bar and has a drink, and I haven't, so it's time for me to go before there isn't a bar anymore. But John Rees, my colleague from Asset Finance Connect, you've done a ton of these events, and today you were interviewing Odile de Sèvres from BPCE, as it is called now. I was almost going to say SCEF. Yeah, I was going to say SCEF. I mean, again, for people who weren't at the event, I guess the question everybody asks is, has BPCE implemented a new strategy towards SCEF?
Great question. I think Odile did really well in telling the industry what's happened with the change from Société Générale to BPCE as its shareholder. And I think what she said was, which was a brilliant response in my mind, why would you pay €1 billion for a company and then change its strategy and change its management? So I think it was a really clever answer to a challenging question, to be honest. I sensed that she was very comfortable with what she was saying. She was very in control of the narrative. Courageous of her to come to this audience 2 months after the completion of the acquisition. But I thought she was strong and eloquent and answered the strategy question really, really well. I got the impression she was probably one of the most optimistic presenters that we had on the stage today. After some quite challenging comments about regulation and bureaucracy in the European Union, but Odile said, "Hey, we'll have challenges. We've had challenges in the past. We'll deal with the challenges and we'll grow the business. We have a shareholder that's invested."
And it was, overall, it was a very optimistic day, I felt. You know, we had Carmen talking about sustainability, and okay, maybe it's slowed down and there's certain roadblocks or obstacles along the way, but it's going to continue. You know, we talked about private credit, private equity coming into the market, you know, that they're maybe looking for niches or underserved areas. We talked about AI and the possibilities it brings. I mean, you're right. I mean, we live in a challenging world, but there was no negativity in the room.
Not at all. No, I felt the whole day, from those on the panels to those in the audience, there was a great positivity. They gave the impression they wanted to be here, both to listen to what was happening on the stage, but the networking, it was a challenge to get people back into the auditorium several times, and which is probably why we messed up on the timing a little bit. But I think there was great positivity in the room and an affection to the industry that people are working in.
Yeah, and it was lovely to see new faces because, I mean, I suppose Asset Finance Connect traditionally very UK-focused. Great to get a very big European audience. Obviously, some people covering Europe who are based in the UK, so we had a real mix. But everybody commented on they got to meet new people,
yes,
as well as to re-meet people that they'd met before.
I think that the Asset Finance Connect has been wanting to get into the European market. It's sort of well-established in the UK market. People come to its events, but this is our second event in Europe, and it will only make us lead to a third and a fourth and a fifth, and we'll find new countries to go to. So yeah, I'm absolutely with you. People seem to want what we were bringing to them today.
Fantastic. Well, look, I don't think we can finish on a more positive note. I'll let you get back to your beer. Well,
thank
and
you.
I'll go in search of one.
Come with me.
Thank you very much, John. So hopefully that gave you a flavour of today's event. If you weren't here, I'm sure, as John Rees said, we'll be doing this again next year. Fantastic conversations, high degree of positivity, incredible engagement from the audience. And my big takeaway for the day was it's just wonderful to get out and meet people face to face and build new connections and reconnect with people you already know. So hope this summary has proved useful. And some of the people that we spoke briefly to today, we'll probably bring back for longer podcasts and go a little bit more into detail with some of the topics they discussed during their sessions today.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Asset Finance Connect, sponsored by Alpha.